Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, on the TV show Shark Tank, aspiring entrepreneurs pitch business ideas to potential investors, and they're not only marketing their ideas, but they're also selling themselves. Now, you may not be an entrepreneur starting up a business, and you may work for someone else, maybe a big company or a small firm, but selling yourself is the key for anyone trying to move ahead in their company or in their career. And our next guest reminds us that just like products, you and I have distinctive assets we should use to differentiate ourselves from the pack. And she's here to share some simple secrets to shark tanking yourself at work, by creating a personal brand to market yourself both within your current employer and should you desire at some point to make a change outside as well. And her message ties in precisely with the mid-career guidelines we've been promoting on this program for over a year, and that's to be proactive rather than passive by looking at yourself as a desirable product and your career as a business with you as the CEO. And you also need to be director of an extended marketing campaign with one product to sell, and that's you. And our guest is Lisa Quast, and she's a certified career coach and business consultant. She's founder of Career Women, Inc. She's a former executive in a $12 billion global corporation, and she's been there and done that. She spent more than 20 years climbing the corporate ladder. She's also author of the award-winning book, Your Career, Your Way, Personal Strategies to Achieve Your Career Aspirations, which is now in its second edition. And she's a noted blogger for Forbes and the Seattle Times. And she's a career expert on prominent top websites like Monster.com and CBS Money Watch. And hello, Lisa, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Well, hi, Roy. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's start by assuming that I'm a fictitious character. I'm age 48 and at the middle of my career, but I'm extremely dissatisfied with my current job and where I am in my career. I don't admire the work I perform every day. It's either boring or stressful, one or the other. My job performance is okay, but far from exceptional, and I have no real game plan for the future. I'm just hoping for a tolerant boss and maybe some raises that will at least let me keep up with the cost of living and have a few luxuries. And it seems like there's little prospect for promotion or job enhancement anytime soon. And I just sort of fell into this job when I lost my prior job or when I returned to the workforce 5 years ago. And I dread Monday mornings. I see work as a necessary evil to pay the bills. And my friends know that I'm unhappy at work, and one of them gifted me a free 30-minute career coaching session with you. Where would you encourage me to start to improve my situation and to locate and maybe get hired for a position better suited to what I want to do?
Well, the first thing that I would say is that it really doesn't matter what your age is. You can actually take control of your career, and that's how you know, the book actually came about, writing Your Career, Your Way. And I think I look back to when I was a college student, and I'm sure that this person probably felt that way too, is, you know, when you're in college, you feel like you can do anything, and you think you can take on the world. And it sounds like what happened to this person, this fictional person, is just like what happened to me, is that, you know, reality kind of set in, and once you get immersed in that business world, oftentimes the situation is that your potential isn't fully being realized.
Maybe no, that's
feels
for sure.
Underutilized, underappreciated. And a lot of that, what I realized, is a lot of that had to do with the fact that I was waiting for others to recognize my great work. I was waiting for other people to see my potential and then promote me to higher challenges.
Yeah, and you just think just by showing up, people are going to see how great you are and immediately put you up on the top rung.
But that's usually not reality.
No.
And one day while I was working on a marketing plan for a new product, I had an epiphany. It was that, you know, that famous aha moment.
Yeah.
And I thought, gosh, why couldn't I write my own career strategic plan but use myself as the product? So
yes.
You got that right. So me as the product.
Yeah, businesses have strategic plans. Why shouldn't individuals have strategic career plans as well?
Exactly. So from that point forward, I decided I was going to treat my career as a business, and I would treat myself as a competitive product.
Yeah.
And so I created a strategic plan for my career. And what I did is I used those same business techniques that I'd been using on products, only I applied them to myself. And it sounds like this is what that fictional person would need to do,
yeah,
is read the book, because it walks them through exercises that will help them systematically evaluate their strengths, look at their weaknesses, analyze their competition, and then determine what their differentiators are.
Yeah, that's one of the things I loved about your book is it has exercises in every chapter. And, if you know, I've had books before where you read through and they read real nicely and then you're all through and you say, what do we do? What do I do next? Or how does this apply to me? But I think it's great that you have exercises in each chapter like that.
Well, thanks. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because that was one of my biggest pet peeves with all the business books that I was reading or the career development books, is I'd walk away and I would have highlighted certain things.
Yeah.
And there was, you know, different pieces of advice I could walk away with. But what I didn't leave reading the book with was a game plan.
Yeah.
And that's what this person or anyone listening would take away from it. As you read the book, each chapter has different exercises. There's two fictional characters that go through the exercises, so you get to see somebody in action doing them. And you can say, oh, okay, now I get it. And then you do the exercises, and at the end of the book, you've created, through those exercises, your very own career strategic plan.
Yeah, that's great when you have that plan completed when you finish the book. You know, if you do that in sync and do those exercises religiously, then you don't have to go back and say, what do I do next? Because you've already got a nice strategic plan in place for it.
Absolutely. And the great part is, I like to look at our careers that we have the chance to have multiple careers. Because if you look at how old people are living to be nowadays, you can have two, sometimes even some women, if they live long enough, could have three 20-year careers.
Yeah, you women can. Us men die off.
But you're catching up quickly. You're catching up to us.
Well, in your book, one of your suggestions is to ask others for constructive criticism, and this is not easy for most of us to do. How can asking for constructive criticism possibly change your career? And another question is, who should you ask? The boss is way too scary, and if you ask good friends, they're probably going to be too easy on you, and I don't know if they'd be honest with you. And you certainly don't want to ask your coworkers, because they're probably competing for the same jobs that you are.
Well, you know, it really depends on the situation. And I know that the really tough part about asking for constructive criticism is that it can definitely be a terrifying experience,
yes,
right?
Yes.
I mean, you know, when isn't asking somebody for improvement suggestions terrifying, right?
Yeah.
But what
you've got to have a strong self-confidence in yourself before you start asking that. I mean,
well, even if you don't have a lot of confidence, what you do need to have is that plan that says, I know this is going to be difficult, but I'm going to do it because I know that getting the feedback will help me in my career, and
yes,
that's what I want to do. And that really is what I learned during my career, is that the short-term pain of those uncomfortable feelings is definitely worth it in the long run.
Yeah.
And here's an example. So years ago, I was actually managing a global integration project. And once it was completed, it was going to yield quite a few new positions.
Holy.
And one of those jobs I really, really wanted, it was as the vice president of marketing in the service division of a medical equipment company.
Yeah.
And So during dinner, it was after an integration meeting, I actually ended up seated next to the CEO of the division.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I think it probably took me, you'll laugh, it probably took me until dessert before I actually worked up the courage to tell him I really wanted to throw my hat in the ring for that position.
Huh.
And what I did is then I asked him, what would you think if I wanted to do that job? Do you think I could do the job?
Yeah, that's a great way to do it.
Well, the tough part is he answered in a way I didn't expect. So he kind of, you know, he did the hemmed and hawed. He scratched his chin for a while. But then he looked at me and he said, you know what, Lisa? At this time, I really don't think that you'd be able to do the job. And that's what I mean as far as, you know, asking for constructive criticism.
Yeah, well, at least he also was honest with you. A lot of times, you know, when somebody's caught unaware like that at a dinner or someplace, they're not expecting to be hit with something like that. They just hem and haw, and it's great that he gave you that honest answer, I think. In the long, I mean, it wasn't great at the time for you, I'm sure you, but long term, I guess it was.
Well, yeah, and that was the tough part. Is I felt like sitting there, my heart sank all the way to my feet.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But what I had to do is I had to kind of take myself up emotionally off the floor, and then I asked him to tell me about that. Help me understand why you feel that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And the key really to asking for constructive criticism is don't become defensive. You know, don't become angry. And what I did is I just tried to understand his reasoning behind that comment.
Yeah.
And what I ended up getting from him, it was as if he laid his poker cards on the table for me.
Yeah.
Because he said, well, you know what, there are three areas I'm not so sure that you could really do the job. And when he explained those three areas to me, what I realized is that his perception of me didn't accurately match my skills and experience in two of the three areas.
Yeah.
Although I have to admit, he had a really good point about my weaknesses in the third area.
Oh, I see. But so you had a chance to dispel those weaknesses in the first two areas, I guess.
Exactly. So sitting there, what I asked him is I said, if I can prove my expertise to you in the first two areas, and if I can show you a game plan for me to become an expert in the third area, would you support me in throwing my hat in the ring for that job then? And I probably had to kind of control my excitement because when he said yes, I almost jumped up and down.
Yeah, well, that's such a different approach than most people that had received that disappointing word would take. They probably just slink away or in anger or whatever and resent the fact that they didn't get the opportunity.
Right. Well, and that's why it's so important to sometimes set your emotions aside and try to find out what other people think of you and get that feedback, because if you have that feedback, then you can use it to your advantage.
Yeah.
And I look back at that situation, and I can honestly say that I probably wouldn't have gotten the job, because I did end up getting the job. It was a really long, drawn-out and kind of grueling interview process, but I earned the position. And I look back, and my thoughts are that I wouldn't have received that position had it not been that I asked him what he thought, because otherwise I wouldn't have known he thought I had weaknesses in those areas.
Yeah, and he wouldn't have known that's how strongly you wanted that position if you hadn't asked.
Correct. So to this day, I regularly ask others for feedback, and then I use that information to my advantage in my career. And for all the listeners out there, this process of how you ask for constructive criticism is the exercise that's included in Chapter 3 in Your Career Your Way.
Yeah.
And you can ask for feedback from anyone. Once you know the process and you understand it, it can be a coworker. It could be someone in another department. It could be someone above or below you. It could be a friend or even, you know, someone in your family.
Not the spouse.
Goal is to get kind of a 365.
I get that criticism from my spouse without even asking.
Well, there you go. Hey, every little bit helps, though, because
some of it's constructive.
There's that old thing, that perception is reality, right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, you have an interesting comment that most of us work backwards when personal branding. You call it fire, ready, aim. How can we avoid this mistake, and how should we be doing it?
Well, that's a good comment. I love that saying. It actually is ready, aim, fire.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, sometimes people get so excited about something that the old thing ends up becoming fire, ready, aim.
Yeah.
And a good example of this is a client of mine, Jeff. See, I'm sure you can just picture him. He's a tall, dark-haired Italian, and he's on the East Coast, and he does everything fast.
Yeah.
He speaks fast, he walks fast, he works fast, he even drinks coffee fast. And that's tough to do because I'm from Seattle.
Yeah, you're the Starbucks home there.
Yep. So after he read Your Career Your Way, what Jeff realized is that he needed to slow down and he needed to get more strategic in his career.
Oh,
his problem is that he wanted to be known as the go-to guy when it came to managing large, complex projects at work. But he just didn't have the visibility that he needed to try and get assigned to lead those important projects.
Yeah.
So what Jeff did is he used those exercises in the book to help him take a step back to define his overall career goals, and then he created a plan for how he could brand himself as that go-to project guy within his company.
Yeah, that's going back and developing that plan before you just fire and say, I want this responsibility.
Right. And I'm sure Jeff would be the first person to tell everybody that it was definitely not easy for him to slow down because he's got a very outgoing, driven personality style.
Yeah.
But by slowing down and then following those exercises, what it did is it forced him to really think about and then define his career goals and then conduct the research that he needed to figure out how other project managers were branding and marketing themselves.
Yeah, that's so important, to go beneath the surface and actually research hard facts of how other people have accomplished what you're trying to accomplish. And I love, for instance, in your book also how you say that you should ID and evaluate competitors so you know who you're competing against for various jobs. And you have, obviously, you need to determine your goals. I'm just looking at some of the chapter titles that you have in your book because it's so few of us go through this really disciplined approach to, like I know when I was in a couple companies, I didn't even like the job, but I was competing for the next level where I'd get a company lease car or some ridiculous thing. When I look back on it, you know, I never did like that job from the day I walked in off the street, and yet you get caught up in this day-to-day stuff, and it just it's amazing how few people step back and really take a look at their career.
It's true, and what we don't do also is most people don't tend to take business techniques like strategic planning or like product marketing and apply those techniques to themselves.
Yes.
And so that's what I really tried to do with this book, is just create a step-by-step guidebook with exercises. So let's say that you're looking for a job, it could help you do that. Or you're just starting a new job, it can help you be the best that you can be in that new job.
Yeah, you shouldn't just figure the job is done once you get hired for something. Then you need to have a strategic plan within that your new employers for getting ahead and being a success and contributing, obviously, to the profitability of the company.
Right. You know, and a good example, I had a client, Maureen. So she's, you know, a woman in her 50s. She's early 50s. She lives on the West Coast. And almost every day she would stare out the window at work and she would dream about being in a different career. And for her, she, you know, this, a lot of listeners can probably relate. She had stayed in that job because it gave her steady work and because she wanted a stable income while she and her husband raised their children.
Yeah.
But now, you know, like my husband and I, now her kids were grown up and she was finally allowing herself to dream about a different career. So she was excited about all those possibilities, but her problem was she didn't know where to start. She didn't know where to start looking or whether the skills that she had been using would even translate into that dream job in a different industry that she wanted. And so the book helped her evaluate her strengths and weaknesses, and then it taught her how to analyze the job descriptions and the requirements for that dream job against her own skills and abilities.
Yeah, that's so similar to what we talk about in my book, and we talk about, your dream, writing a position description for your ideal position and then visualizing yourself in it and thinking about all the aspects of that job and researching it. And then, that's all before you start contacting potential employers, because you need to, really have start thinking like an incumbent and believing in what you want to do before you just start sending out the resumes or whatever.
And it's interesting that you say that, because for a lot of people, when you've been in a job for, 20-odd years, all of a sudden you're thinking, oh, my gosh, this is so overwhelming. I don't even know where to start. I haven't updated a resume in probably 10 or 15 years. And that was how Maureen felt. But the good thing is the book gave her the step-by-step game plan. And what she ended up doing is she updated her resume. She, for the first time, created a profile on LinkedIn. She even, in her early 50s, updated her wardrobe and her hairstyle. Ooh. And she had her husband and her kids help her brush up on her interview skills.
That's good. Yeah, one thing that's really tough, and I'm thinking of, say, a lady that wants to return to the workforce after raising kids or whatever and has been off for a while, is how you, and you have that dream position and you have a focus on your strategic plan, but how you sell some of that non-specific experience of just living and managing a household or whatever it might be, and to sell that into, make yourself a valuable resource or a product for a potential employer. That's a kind of a challenge, but with a strategic plan, I'm sure it helps.
It does, because it takes some of the emotion out of it, and it really lets you look at yourself from a different perspective.
Yeah.
I know for me it was a really eye-opening experience, because I hadn't thought of myself as a product and really said, companies work on improving products every year to make them more valuable and to sell more in the marketplace.
Well, that's a good point, too. You need to work on the product.
Exactly, and that product is you.
Yeah. Yeah. We're just about out of time, but I have to ask you one more thing. We come to that ritual near and dear to practically nobody's heart, the annual employee performance review, and you offer four secrets to managing your boss and ensuring a favorable outcome to the review, and we're all ears.
Well, some of the keys that I would say as far as trying to manage up or make sure that you receive a good performance review is to really focus on that relationship with your boss.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, Amy, is a good example. Her boss, she had worked for the same person for 7 years, and he had never given her a performance evaluation because they weren't mandatory at the company.
Oh, I see.
And what we talked about is that she could proactively try to improve that relationship by sitting down with him and understanding what his goals are for the department.
Yeah,
once
exactly.
She knew that, then she came up with projects and ways she could better, contribute to the department and help her boss achieve his goals.
Yeah, and obviously the performance review is an ideal place to use that constructive criticism as well, to ask, how can I do the job better and be open to constructive criticism rather than just the usual.
Definitely, and that's one of the things people can do, and this is what Amy did. I had her create a project list document where she kept track of everything that she was working on, and then that's what she used when she sat down with her boss to give him regular updates. Now, he was really busy, though. He ran a really large department, so what she ended up doing is she flexed her communication style to his by emailing him a brief weekly update and attaching that document, and then she scheduled one-hour in-person meetings with him once a month. And what that did is it made it really easy for her boss when performance reviews did become mandatory because he knew exactly what she was working on. He saw her progress every month and, the little updates every week.
Yeah.
And so it really just – it made it such an easy process when it came time for him to do the written performance evaluations.
Yeah, the written performance evaluation in a well-run company never should be a surprise, because both the employee and the boss should know pretty much where they stand at all times, and through regular meetings, and that's such an ideal, sending that email, and those are great ideas that you're talking about. Well, what's the best way for listeners to preview and purchase your book, Your Career, Your Way, Strategies to Achieve Your Career Aspirations?
Probably the easiest way is it's available on both Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's available in paperback or in the electronic ebook format.
Now, can we men read? I know this is specifically sort of targeted toward women and their careers, but sounds like there's a lot of good stuff for us men, too, in it. But
there's a lot of great stuff. It is targeted for women, so I do use the two fictional characters are female. But that's because generally it's women that are the ones that are asking me for the most amount of help. So I wrote the book targeting women. However, both men and women read the book, and
yeah,
a lot of companies also use it as the basis for their mentoring programs. So
yeah, I would think Cheryl's experience would be much closer to the listeners. I think she's 39 or so, which is somewhat
right,
closer to our
older
listening audience. But the other one, I think, is just coming out of school or something. I don't.
So I guess I should rewrite the book. You're right. I should add a third fictional character, shouldn't I? That's a little bit even older than Cheryl.
Maybe so, because like you say, there's no reason that whether you're 45 or 55, why you should just suffer along to retirement and just struggle doing something that you don't want to do, because everyone should be in a situation where they're paid to have a good time and obviously do good work as well. And you can't really do good work unless you're enjoying what you're doing, I don't think.
That's
anyone really succeeds if they're miserable.
That's so true, and that holds true no matter what your age, right?
And what's your website if someone's interested in your coaching or the other consulting and work that you do? Where would they go for that?
My website is www.careerwomaninc.com. So www.careerwomaninc.com.
And let me tell you that I think Lisa's written a great book, and it's I love all those both the fictional characters that work right along with you and the exercises she had in there, because that's exactly the way I lay out my book, A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up. And I think it's so much more valuable if you have exercises to do throughout the book. And I encourage anyone to quit being miserable in their work. And I don't care if you're 48 or 58, if you're not happy at work and you're not happy in where your career is headed, I would highly recommend Lisa's book. And thank you so much for joining us today, Lisa, on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Well, thanks, Roy. And one last thought. I just want to let everybody know that you really can have your career your way, but you have to treat your career as a business and treat yourself as a competitive product.
Amen. And you're the product manager, and your only real product is you, so get with it and
you
sell
got
that
it.
Product. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you, Roy.
Bye-bye. Well, let's continue on the subject of careers and how at midlife you can jumpstart yours in the new year. You know, a recent survey of 400 North America employees discovered that two-thirds were unhappy in their jobs. And if that's an accurate reflection on society as a whole, it's a national tragedy. And if this describes you, are you willing to spend the bulk of your daytime waking hours joyless and dissatisfied? Also, I'm willing to wager that unhappiness at work, if you have that, probably spills over into dissatisfaction in other areas of life, relationships, and free time recreation. Because it's not possible to switch a happiness gauge on and off like a light bulb when you leave the office. And our next guest suggests it doesn't have to be that way. And he points out that each one of us was created with a built-in navigation system that can guide our decision-making to find activities, including career, relationships, and lifestyle, that will energize and motivate us. And that system is our intuition, perhaps more appropriately called our internal wisdom. You may refer to it as a hunch or a gut feeling. And you know, if we'd only listen, this internal wisdom will direct us to our highest joy, fulfilling our very own unique life mission and embracing our magnificence. And the joyous corollary is we will begin to love life and to contribute maximum value in service to others, which is a true win-win situation. And our guest is the Reverend Justin Epstein. He's a dynamic, inspirational speaker, has given more than 130 presentations to thousands in New York City's Lincoln Center. He integrates insights from Christianity, Judaism, yoga, philosophy, Eastern religions, psychology, science, and personal development, a real Renaissance man. And he's author of the brand new book, Super You, 7 Steps to Profound Peace and Personal Power. And he's also an ordained Unity minister and a stand-up comedian who you may have seen in a New York City area comedy club. Hello, Reverend Justin, and welcome. It's indeed an honor to have you here today.
Hi, Roy. Great to be on your show.
Well, how do you and I discover and tap into this internal wisdom? We know it's there, but we may not be aware of where it is or how to get to it.
Right, exactly. Well, it's important, first of all, to realize that we all have an internal guidance system, that it's something that's a part of us. It's within us, just like we see in nature. You know, the animals are guided in amazing ways, to the salmon swimming upstream to the place where they were born to spawn, and it's in nature.
The birds,
and it's also
going
within
south,
us.
There's the birds knowing when to go south and when to come north. That always
exactly.
amazes
Exactly. It is amazing. Yeah. And why would we be any different than the rest of nature?
That's very true.
Yeah.
But so many of us don't seem to think we're lost and trapped in our circumstances or whatever, and we don't seem to realize or depend upon that internal wisdom.
Right. Yeah, we tend to look outside and believe we're dependent on the external, whereas there's a lot of people who are creating the life that they want. They're looking within inside themselves and asking, what do I enjoy doing, or what would I love to do? What makes me happiest? And then they go about thinking about how they can bring that into their life, and they start to create it.
Yeah, now how do we go about, once we acknowledge that we have that inner wisdom and that inner instinct inside us, how do we go about finding it? Obviously, you can't force it upon yourself. You can't say, I'm going to work harder and find my internal instinct. So how do we go about, is it like meditation, or what do we do to find that?
Yeah, you actually hit on a very important way to do it. Meditation, which, is an idea, Roy, that comes from the East.
Yeah.
But it's really something that's very natural to who we are. It's taking time in the stillness, learning to quiet the mind so that we can begin to experience that quiet center within ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's the real source of these inner wisdom and guidance and creativity. It's available to every one of us. We tend to think of people like Edison or Einstein or Buckminster Fuller or other people as being geniuses.
Yeah.
But really, as someone once said, mediocrity is self-bestowed as well as genius. It's within each one of us.
Yeah.
So, taking time to get still, Roy.
Yeah.
And those, connect.
The people like Edison found a way to tap into that knowledge that's out there in the universe, and most of us just don't know how to do that, I guess.
Yeah, or we don't, we're raised to think that certain individuals are born geniuses, or they're born great, and many people haven't learned that it's inherent within every one of us. Of course, parents can only teach what they know themselves.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's time we realize that there is greatness within each one of us, and we just need to take time to connect with it. And being still, learning to quiet the mind, is a primary way we connect with that inner wisdom and our natural guidance system. It's learning to still the restless mind and open up to that higher level of mind that is within us, and it's very natural.
Let's say that I'm in a job that I really like, two-thirds people in that survey that I really don't like my job, or even worse yet, maybe I just got laid off from my job, and you know, my tendency is to run out and go on the internet and start looking madly for job listings or in the local newspaper or wherever I might go, and that's probably the totally wrong way to go about it, because you'll probably end up in a job you like just as poor or worse than the one you had. I know that's happened to me.
Good point.
In the past, but
exactly.
How best do you know? Do you go about looking at your instincts and then converting that into a job search where you really haven't narrowed down and are looking for what you really want?
Well, you hit on something very important, Roy. A lot of times people will just, you know, they won't stop to think about what it is they really enjoy doing, and and they just start getting busy. And I think it's really important that we stop and ask the question, what am I happiest being?
Yeah.
What am I most happy being? You know?
Yeah, it's amazing how few people really ask themselves that. What am I most happy doing or being, or you know, what brings me true joy? And
exactly. And you know, life is kind of short to not be doing something we enjoy. And as you were saying, you know, a lot of people are just looking for the income, which of course is important. They're looking at job benefits and they're looking at the income. And just sort of getting by, you know, making ends meet. And what a lot of time we spend working, and why not do something that we enjoy?
Yeah,
so one question is, you know, to simply ask, what do I enjoy being?
Yeah.
A person can enjoy being funny. A person can enjoy being a healing influence. A person can enjoy being creative. And, you know, once we answer that question, I am happy as being, then the question is, all right, is there a way I can start to create a career around what I am happiest being?
And it's happiness being, and going a step beyond that, how do I most want to serve others? What is the most fulfilling to me in serving others, as sort of an expansion on being? It's also how you're helping your fellow humanity, and but enjoy doing it. Not you know, you don't volunteer to cook at the Wednesday night fellowship hour if you hate to cook, for instance.
Yeah, right. Exactly. and you know, Roy, that's a great point too, because a lot of times when people are without work, which you mentioned, they start thinking in terms of, well, I need to get on somebody's payroll.
Yeah.
I need a job.
Yeah.
And I'm not employed.
Yeah.
And it's important, like you said, to begin thinking in terms of, my job is to, first of all, find a job.
Yeah.
And secondly, to go with an attitude of, how can I be of service? How can I give? How can I contribute? And like you said, volunteering and doing something that we enjoy and can make a contribution is a great way to get in that flow attracting a right job.
Not to mention, you often make contacts with people who can help you find that job if you're volunteering in an area that you really admire and are good at. You make contacts.
Exactly. Yeah. You just never know what's going to happen when you're out there. Volunteering, giving of yourself.
It's so unfortunate when somebody's life and their feeling is so much wrapped up in the job they have now. Like when you go to a party, what do you do for a living? Seems to be about the first question most people ask. And then when they lose their jobs, they mistakenly say that the essence of you is gone because your job is gone. And that's so ridiculous, because it's still you, and that's what you're really searching for, the inner you, so that you can go out and find a better job or one better suited to what you really want to do.
Yes, yes. How many people who, lose their job and they feel like they've lost their identity because they've so much tied into their job and identified with it.
Yeah, and I've had jobs that I really despised, and yet I identified with those and spent long hours trying to get ahead and didn't even enjoy what I was doing. And that's so foolish.
Yeah, it's tough to do that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a lot of people.
I was just going to say the title of your new book is Super You. And what do you mean by that term and how it applies to me and you and me? Should we go to the party store and buy a Superman or a Wonder Woman costume?
Well, you could do that, Roy. I like the Batman costume myself.
Okay.
Yeah, you could do that. Well, I'm talking about, again, like we opened up talking about today, that higher part, that higher dimension that is within us. That's really the... When we tap into that, that's really our super self.
Yeah. I think you refer to that as the spiritual self as well, don't you?
I sure do.
I think you call it the place within where God is expressed in you. And I love how you use that, that your spiritual self is like a wave as it relates to the ocean. And it's the same components as the ocean, but it's a unique manifestation within each person. And I like that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we all have that essence that is us. And we just need to, or at least can, rely on it and connect with it and allow it to guide us.
But to recognize that presence within you, emphasize that you've got to gain mastery over your emotions. And you even did a CD for golfers one time called the Enlightened Golfer, I think.
Yeah, that's
right.
Well,
I need to get a hold of that because I used to play golf years ago. I quit a long time ago because I'd go out there and, start out well and say about the fifth hole I'd have a couple of rotten shots, maybe even whiff a couple, and I'd have about a 10, and that would ruin. I wouldn't enjoy playing the rest of the day because I wouldn't bury that. I wouldn't bury my emotions, and I'd just go about trying to get the holes finished.
That's right. That's you're not alone. A lot of golfers in that boat. And it's,
I know. I was also, and this is so true, that you point out that whatever name you call, whether it be God, Universal Truth, Great Spirit, Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh, Brahman, the Tao, they're all really one and the same in all great religions when it comes right down to it, and the world sort of point to the same spiritual direction.
Yes. Yes. One presence that's in everything.
Yeah.
Created everything. Whatever we call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And it's so sad when religions, we've even had wars between various religious beliefs, and it makes no sense whatsoever when you realize that it's all one God or one universal presence that we're all pointing toward.
Right. I may be wrong, Roy, but I've often thought that God and religion is simply used by people with other motives, political motives, power motives, money motives, that it's not really about the religion. I think it's more about other needs trying to be met using religion.
Yes, very definitely true.
Yeah. Yeah, because when you look at the leaders of the different religions, even, Muhammad was a gentle man. He was a very spiritual man. He wasn't about, let's go out and kill everybody.
All the infidels.
and Jesus wasn't that way either. So the Crusades and these kinds of things, the witch hunts are not really the religion. It's something else going on there.
That's very definitely so. Well, your book presents 7 steps to become the super you and to gain profound peace and personal power. Can you describe a few of those steps and how we can apply them in locating and launching a career that we were really meant to have?
Absolutely. Well, step number one is super acceptance, which is getting in touch with your emotional and your human self. Sometimes people on the spiritual path, they realize, gee, this God is within me and I'm a spiritual being, and then they're like, well, what do I do with the negative emotions that I have? I know I want to be positive. I know that my thoughts and expectations attract things and people in my life, So I just want to be positive. Well, we're all growing,
boys,
so we're going to have moments where we're not so positive.
Have to recognize that negative emotions don't just go away, but positive thinking.
Exactly, and it's not really a good thing to bury them either.
No.
So to realize that and not to judge whatever emotions we have, but allow ourselves to experience the emotions, realizing that when we allow ourselves to feel those emotions, they will pass through us.
And to understand why we're feeling them and not just some sense that they're there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that can be very helpful. That's why being aware of our thoughts and emotions, realizing that we're not our thoughts and emotions and our behavior, but just having an awareness of them can be very healing. And, you know, when you're looking for work, a lot of emotions can flow through you.
Yeah.
So there's much to be aware of. And when we realize that I can be aware, I'm not my emotions, then I can make choices and take actions and not be immobilized by my feelings, by my emotions.
Yeah, that's very true, that you can realize that you're more than your emotions and that those emotions are not helping you if they're negative. And
yes.
If you understand that, you can start conquering those.
Yes. And then step two is relax and release super you, which is when you take time to get still, as we were talking about, and connect with the higher self, then it's a matter of allowing it to guide you, letting it unfold through you in your life, trusting that you're being guided, that you're being guided as to discover what it is I really would like to do. You're being guided to the right people, the right connections, the right ways of finding that which you really would love to do. And also lightening up about the whole experience.
Yeah.
You know, finding ways of looking at oneself and one's life with a sense of humor.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Still looking back with anger and cussing, cursing out your fate and all those kind of things, or blaming your former boss and all these worthless exercises that get you nowhere.
Exactly, because really, what is that? It's looking and focusing on the past, and it's, again, if we carry anger and resentment and bitterness around with us, that is a block to this divine guidance system.
Yes, very definitely.
Yeah, so we want to be free of that. And then, well, we talked about one of the steps on super guidance already.
Yeah.
And super living in the super zone is another step in this process, which is learning to enjoy the present moment, learning to live our present moments, and not living in the past, like you just mentioned, and not worrying about
the
future.
Yeah, that's. Yeah, if you could live every moment in the present, you'd be so much better off than.
Wouldn't we be good, well off, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Life is only happening right now. It doesn't happen any other time.
No, that's true.
Yeah. So
how can someone best obtain your new book, Super You, 7 Steps to Profound Peace and Personal Power? I know that was just very recently released.
Yes.
They can
get it on Amazon.
Oh,
just by searching Super You, and it'll come up there.
Yeah. And how would a frustrated golfer get your CD, The Enlightened Golfer? Where would they?
Well, he could write me at Justin Epstein International, intl@gmail.com.
Oh, I see.
And I could work on making that available.
Yeah, that's something really
Justin Epstein, intl@gmail.com.
Well, I certainly, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, well, I love talking to golfers. I've talked to hundreds of them about those ideas so that they can enjoy their game more and play better.
Well, here's a suggestion for everyone out there. If you're frustrated either out of work or at a job you don't like, purchase and read Reverend Epstein's book and spend the rest of this year what I call taking a vacation to find that vocation, maybe meditating daily and discussing, consulting your inner wisdom and taking control of your emotions rather than rushing out to, search madly for a job that you may like less than the one you have now. And then you can hit the ground running, perhaps maybe in early January, launching an inner-directed job search and a personal marketing campaign to sell one product, and that's the super you that Justin talks about. And you'll have a giant leg up on the competition for jobs that you cherish because you'll know precisely where you want to go in your career, and you'll be competent in where you're going because you'll know it's where you're meant to be, and you will have visualized performing the job, and you'll know what it takes to get there, and you can think and act like an incumbent. And then you can find someone else to pay you to have a good time performing the tasks that meet your talents and ones you admire, and the result will be a productive and totally enjoyable second half of life. How does that sound, Justin? You think that's
that sounds
idea?
Fantastic, Roy.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed, and all true.
And thank you so much, Reverend Justin, for joining us today, and hope that people will take your advice and will check out that book. And once again, what's the title?
Super You, 7 Steps to Profound Peace and Personal Power.
Go to Amazon and check it out, because it's definitely a book that I think you should preview and consider getting a hold of. And thank you so much for joining us today, Justin, and best of success with that new book and all your other ventures.
Thanks a lot, Roy. Joy to be on your show.
And tune in again next week when we'll talk about other ways that you can make 2014 the greatest year ever. And thank you for joining Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.